Welcome, everyone. Today is May 18th. My name is Nettie Legassi. I'm the Associate Executive Director of NYISO, and you have joined the May Open Teleconference. NYISO holds open teleconferences once a month, just an opportunity to talk about different projects and things that are going on at NYISO, to have an informal chat, and then also welcome questions and conversation from participants on the call. So thank you for joining us today. The topic of today's call is the ISO TC46 meetings that were held last week. I was about to say they were held in London, but they were not actually held in London. They were going to be held in London. And of course, the meetings were canceled in person because of the worldwide pandemic, but we took part in the meetings online. With me today to talk about the meetings is my boss, Todd Carpenter, the NYISO Executive Director. And I see a few people on the call, at least I believe, were participants in the TC46 meetings as well. So it sounds like we'll have a pretty good conversation. We do really try to keep it, informal. It's not a presentation. There are no slides. It's just us talking. Many people are just connected on the telephone, so no visuals are possible this way. We might talk for a while and have questions or conversation. I am recording the call just so that we can circulate it later to people who might not be able to make it today. But towards the end of the call, we will also stop recording. So if there's anything that don't want to be recorded, there's an opportunity to do that. And then we'll also have time to talk about any questions about NYISO in general as well. So Todd, hey there.
Well, hello. Good afternoon.
How's it going? You're back in the time zone of your choice.
Yes, my preferred time zone. Yes. Oddly enough, I was explaining this to someone that hosting a meeting, participating in a meeting that is in London or, wherever TC46 may be, is always a challenge, just because of the time zones and jet lag and that sort of thing. But it was somehow worse when we had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to participate.
Yeah, I found myself, I was still waking up, wide awake, 3:30 all through the weekend too. So I had successfully switched to London time during the week of meetings, and now I need to come back.
Yes, welcome back to Boston time.
Yeah, so I think just to be clear, the meetings went on. The schedule that was planned back in January was kept for the most part. And the meetings, with actually the exception of one of the subcommittees, the meetings were held on London time. So we got up pretty early to be ready to go at 9 a.m. London time, which was fun.
Well, to be fair, there are a variety of meetings that ISO takes place, and there is no perfect time for anyone. So, we, the US, Canada, Mexico, South America, pulled the short end of the stick this time. Mm-hmm. But, similarly, our friends in Asia are regularly up until, 10, 11 o'clock at night to participate in ISO meetings.
That's absolutely true. That's true. So what is TC46? What is ISO TC46 and why does it exist? Who's involved in it?
Sure.
So what happens during the plenary week?
Let's take those things in order. ISO is the International Standards Organization. It's an international body comprised of just about every country in the world. It's a membership organization where each country has a national member body that represents that country in the international standards process. So that's the organization, and ISO TC46 is the technical committee, so that's where the TC comes from, and it is focused on information and documentation. These are standards related to publishing, libraries, archives, content creation and distribution, as well as the kind of technical interoperability issues presented by those. So it is numbered. So all ISO technical committees are numbered, and they're numbered sequentially in terms of how they were developed or proposed. So TC46 was the 46th committee to be formed. That's why we're 46. It doesn't have any other meaning apart from that. I think there are something like 280 technical committees now presently working within ISO. So that's the group that standardizes work in our space, sort of similar to an international version of NISO, although there's pretty significant differences.
So what's the plenary week all about?
So the technical committee has a program of work. It has five subcommittees, and we get together physically, ideally, virtually this year, to have working group meetings, but also have leadership meetings and plenary meetings where we set out and report on the program of work, as well as take some administrative actions and discuss published work or forthcoming work, or talk about discussions related to new work, as well as we talk about, you know, maybe problems that a project is having and how do we resolve those problems that are kind of a step above the, you know, the technical work that is taking place. Say if there are changes of leadership, or if there are issues and problems with scope, or if a project is having trouble getting going, or having trouble, you know, with questions about its scope, the plenary is the opportunity to kind of take some decisions about those issues.
And probably, since plenary week is usually held in person, a lot of those kinds of more momentous decisions are easier done in person rather than online, which you could do any time of the year, I suppose.
And some of the, you know, kind of some of the more challenging, I'd say, issues are better resolved in person. You know, there is constantly work taking place at ISO on the standards development groups. I mean, most of the committees work throughout the year. Most of them are meeting maybe monthly as they kind of work to develop a draft standard or resolve comments. A lot of that stuff does take place online, but you know, as anybody who's familiar with online meetings and standards development, you know, it often, you know, 4 or 5 hours in person is worth several months of you know, teleconference time.
So can you, not to go into more acronyms or numbers, but can you briefly describe the subcommittees of TC46?
Sure. So the technical committee itself does a handful of work that happens within working groups that report directly to TC46. So that is language codes, that is transliteration standards, that is country codes. So those are working groups under TC46. Then there are subcommittees of TC46. There are five of them. And I won't harass people with the numbers, but they are essentially technical interoperability, performance assessment. The third is identification and description. The fourth is physical preservation. And the fifth is archives and records management. So those are different portfolios of work under information and documentation. So SC4, for example, works with protocols and schemas and metadata for the processes used by libraries, publishers, and archives and museums to describe things and describe their collections or trade content from one thing to another, you know, interlibrary loan issues, RFID issues. Performance assessment is, you know, how do we measure and develop metrics for how libraries and archives and museums are functioning. Identification and description, this is the area with identifiers, bibliographies, indices. That's where these standards are. So this is the home of ISBN and ISSN and DOI. Physical preservation, that focuses on things like paper and ink and binding and archival boxes. And then archives and records management deals with the entire area of preservation, of maintaining, creating records, kind of often business records or government records, and how do you maintain those, you know, both digitally as well as physically.
Good. So during the TC46 week, there were, I'm looking at the schedule now, and it looks like at least a couple dozen different meetings, maybe more, scattered throughout the week at different time periods. Mm-hmm. How do you decide which meetings you're going to be attending, especially when they're back to back
or overlapping?
Yes.
Well, first of all, one of NISO's responsibilities is we serve as the secretariat for the identifiers group, SC9. So as part of my responsibilities as secretary and committee manager for SC9, I have to attend those SC9 meetings. And there was maybe 7 or 8 of those throughout the week, as well as run the plenary meeting. On the list of things, the list of priorities for me personally, I am also usually the head of delegation. So that's an official title. I'm the chief spokesman, if you will, for the US in these meetings. And I register US votes in the meetings. So I prioritize participating in those plenary meetings of the 5 different subcommittees. Although occasionally, you know, particularly in SC11, friends, colleagues from NARA usually serve as head of delegation for NARA, although it's really important that I be there for, you know, procedural reasons. Occasionally, if there's overlap with the plenary meetings, I will usually attend the larger one, and Nettie will attend the smaller one, if you will. The working group meetings really depends on the program of work and how, like, where in the process it stands. So there are certain stages in the development of an ISO project where it is really important for US participation and US description of our issues and concerns be highlighted. Say in the scoping meetings at the beginning of those, that project is usually an important stage. The commenting period, so the point at which after a ballot is submitted and national bodies have all submitted their comments, how those comments are resolved and what changes are made to the document in response to that comments is also a really important stage that if there's a project that's in that stage, I'll make an extra effort to participate in those meetings.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this year actually being virtual, I mean, typically there's enough, you know, the US delegation has, you know, five or six or seven people going in person, which is sometimes one of the larger delegations. I noticed virtually that there were I think every one thing I noticed was not just the U.S. representation. There were a lot of people that were in individual working group meetings, like the ILL meeting had several Americans who are members of the working group who were online. Mm-hmm. I think all of the meetings had a lot of different representation from around the world, which I think was interesting.
And there are, when we get together in person, there are always, there's sort of, there is always participation from the French and the Chinese and the UK. They're always participating. The US is almost, we try to be there every time we can and almost always there. But this time there was a lot of participation from countries that we don't get to see. Kenya, for example, participated in many of the meetings. South Africa, Croatia. It was very exciting to see participation from those countries that, maybe don't have the resources to, be flying around the world, or there's visa problems, or, just a challenge logistically to participate in these meetings physically. I saw a lot of international participation from members, and that was really fantastic.
Were there other, just the difference between virtual and physical meetings, any other observations about the virtual component this year? Early start.
I think that there were two things that really struck me, having been in virtual meetings, being in virtual meetings a lot, but comparing how things happened in the virtual environment versus the physical environment, two things that stood out. I thought the committee managers and committee chairs and working group conveners were maybe a bit more organized. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the things that take a long time in person, we spend a lot of time, and the committee managers, it seems, spend a lot of time preparing things like resolutions and presentations in advance. So things that usually took a really long time, like drafting resolutions, which can take, hours sometimes, we managed to get through them in maybe half the time.
There was an impetus to get them prepared quickly in advance if possible.
And trying to keep things organized and on schedule. I think there was a lot of successful work preparation done in that regard. Maybe something we can learn for future in-person meetings, but that the online form. The other thing that struck me was we were using Zoom, and we used some of the features of Zoom, like raising your hand and the yes/no functionality, which I think led to a bit more. There was maybe a little less talking over each other and a little less back and forth, but it seemed more organized. Mm. And I like to think that everyone got a chance to communicate their opinions either by raising their hand and speaking or in the chat functionality. So that was another thing that I thought worked better than usual.
Yep. Any particular outcomes or news or decisions that were taken this last week that you'd like to?
Oh, sure. Oh, so much. I think maybe this is going to be the meat of the conversation. I'm going to go through, four of the subcommittees and just a very high level report on some of the things that took place or some of the discussions that took place. So within SC4, There was some significant work this year on the revision of the Dublin Core standard. Dublin Core, the ISO standard for Dublin Core, part two was revised this year and published. That's the properties and classes subsection. And they're working on the part one. That's an important standard. It's used in, you know, 70-80% of websites. There is a proposal also within SC4 to launch a new project called DPIP, which is the Data Exchange Protocol for Interoperability and Preservation. This is a proposal by the French. And this is for communicating information about and also communicating digitally objects for between producers and archives for content related to preservation. That'll be going out for its first ballot in the next couple months. There is also work within SC4 on the EPUB standard. There's a suite of standards or technical specifications and standards related to EPUB. So this is a joint working group between SC4 and several other technical committees to standardize the EPUB, create an international standard for the EPUB specification, which is a standard from the W3C. So there's a standard 23736, which is a version of EPUB. It's version 3.0.1. That is in its draft state at the moment. There are also several other projects related to EPUB. One is a project to develop a technical specification for long-term preservation of EPUBs. This is DTS 22424. There is also another project, another technical specification related to digital rights management, specifically looking at digital rights management for EPUB and the EPUB format. There are three parts to this technical specification. The first is an overview of DRM's technologies. Part two is a user key approach, which is based on the Readium LCP specification. And then part three looks at device key approaches. So how do you tie DRM to a device rather than a user? And then finally, with regard to EPUB, there's another project, a kind of fairly important project around accessibility. So EPUB use and applications related to accessibility features that are in EPUB. And this standard is focused on evaluation and certification of EPUBs, the accessibility of EPUB files, as well as the discoverability of accessibility qualities. So essentially metadata around accessibility that is embedded in the EPUB. So that's all at work that's underway under SC4. Under SC9, there is quite a bit of work going on. There is a soon to be published revision of the ISSN standard. So that's the international serial number. There is also a technical report due out soon on rights information and how do you display rights information. So information about what kind of rights you might have. There is also a revision to ISO 690, which is the standard for bibliographic references and what should be included and what are sort of a terminology of things to be included in bibliographic references. That's a pretty significant revision because the earlier standard for bibliographic references was produced before, I think in the early 90s. So before there was things like, how do you reference a tweet? How do you reference a blog, a website, things along those lines. There is a project that I am personally leading on the principles of identification, which is an outline of key aspects, key features and aspects and terminology related to identification of content. That'll be going out for a second ballot sometime in June. There is a project led by the Australians called the Research Activity Identifier. This is a project to identify elements of a research data project. And then finally, there is a project that is exploring something called the International Standard Content Code, which is a blockchain approach to identifying content by hashing the digital file and producing a digital hash of the file and using blockchain technology to then manage that that identifier. Proposed at this meeting was a revision to the DOI standard. So DOI is a digital object identifier. And the DOI is built on the handle system. And at the moment, the DOI standard specifies any of the handles that use a 10-dot prefix. And there is interest by other people who use the handle system to also become DOI registration agencies. So that would necessitate a change in the standard such that other handles that have something other than a 10-dot prefix could become DOIs. And then finally within SC9, there was a project suggested to launch a technical report on technologies related to digital fingerprinting. So how do you create a digital fingerprint and use that as an identification structure? So that's two of the SCs. The third SC is SC8 that I'll talk about, SC10, which is requirements for document storage and preservation. They have a project that's looking, they published two projects this year. One is a revision on measurement techniques for paper and boards used in preservation. So these are, say archival boxes and things like that. And then a second standard that they published was on emergency preparedness and responses. So how do you deal with emergencies like floods and things like that? They're looking at a revision to the standard related to document storage and requirements for archives and libraries. So these are environmental standards for environment related to document storage that probably go under revision this year. And then finally, SC11 is one of the larger subcommittees within, it is the, I think, the largest subcommittee of TC46. And they have been doing a tremendous amount of work around digital preservation and how do you create what sort of standards do we need for archives related to digital preservation of content? So they have been looking at things like structured data environments. How do you preserve a structured data environment? Something like a database. How do you retain records, and what sort of capabilities do you have with regard to maturity of those documents and establishing standards around maturity of those documents? There is a project also focused on blockchain, So what are applications of blockchain technology as they relate to records management? They're producing a technical report focused on issues and considerations around that. There is, of course, a lot of work around metadata. There is a project focused on risk assessment for records processes and systems. So how do we review and what sort of, how do we assess the risks and concerns around records management systems? And there is also, and recently just published is 30300, a revision of that, which is core concepts and vocabulary. This was published right before the plenary. And so this is a kind of foundational document with regard to records management. There's also a new, relatively new group focusing on systems design and functional requirements for systems design to manage digital records. What sort of processes and requirements for software, selecting, designing, implementing, and maintaining software for management of records. And then there's another group that's focused on records management in the cloud. And there's a two-part technical report focusing on issues and concerns related to cloud management of records. And then the second part is around service quality and license agreements. So that is just very high level run through some of the work, not all of the work. I left out SC8.
Right.
SC8 holds its plenary meeting in June. So there's a separate plenary, virtual plenary for SC8.
Which is the statistics and performance evaluation.
Right. And so I didn't mention the work that they've been doing because they didn't really participate in the plenary last week.
And their work is still, their meetings are still to come. So,
right.
Yeah. So I wonder if anyone on the call has any questions or things they'd like to raise about TC46 or the process of making international standards, just to give an opportunity.
Does anybody have any questions about the projects or anything? I mean, I might not be able to, since I'm not an expert in every one of those projects, I might not be able to give you a lot of detail, but we could certainly follow up if anybody had any questions or comments.
How does an international project get proposed? Where does it come from?
There are many different paths that ISO projects could follow, right? The first is every ISO standard that has been published is reviewed every 5 years. So they have a process of reviewing systematically every ISO standard. And if in that process something comes up that needs to be updated or should be changed, that is one way in which a new project could be initiated. So if there is, say, deficiencies in the bibliographic standards, bibliographic reference standards, people could say, well, there are problems with this because it doesn't mention blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We need to reference digital publications, and it doesn't have any. People can work through that systematic review process and make launch revisions of existing standards. There are maintenance agencies for other standards. So all of the identifier standards have maintenance agencies. The country code standards has a maintenance group. Those maintenance groups who work regularly with the standard could say, well, we need to change something, like the suggested change to the DOI standard. that's being proposed by the registration agency for DOI. You know, they see a need in expanding the handles used, and here's a problem with the standard, and can we fix it? There's also another, there's two other paths. One would be, and this is sort of what's going on with the content, the blockchain content code hash identifier. Someone has an idea, but we're not quite sure that it needs a, whether it should be an ISO standard, whether it's ready for being an ISO standard, whether the technology is mature enough. And then, so in that case, people suggest that we study it as a preliminary work item. And then the final, well, actually there's two more ways in which things can become launched as ISO standards. One is if there is a national standard, so say KBART, for example, is a US NISO project.
Right.
And if we wanted to take that to an ISO level, we could take it to and say, here is this standard that we have created. And maybe KBART isn't a perfect example because it's a tech, it's
recommended practice.
Recommended practice, not a standard. But we could say standardize it and then take it to ISO and formalize it at an ISO level. Through a kind of fast track process. This is a standard, it exists, people are using it. This should just become an ISO standard as well. And then another idea, another way that things can get launched is someone says, I have an idea of something that needs to happen. And here is my proposed solution to that problem. And ISO can work to develop that as a standard. This is a bit more challenging because, you know, it's challenging to go directly to an ISO standard without having the breadth of, say, community support and adoption. So if things start off as ISO standards, it's a bit more challenging for them to be adopted than if, say, you know, the ISBN number existed before it became the ISBN standard. It was developed in the UK, or ISSN was a NISO standard, and then we brought it to ISO. DOI was a NISO standard, and IATF recommendation before it became an ISO standard. So having that sense of maturity and adoption helps, but it's not by no means the only way.
Right.
So if someone on the call or someone listening to this recording has a great idea for a standard that has an international component, you know, they could contact us and we can walk you through the various, you know, the procedures to get a project launched. But sometimes it kind of works better if it's launched within a national context and then kind of road tested before it's brought up to an ISO level.
Good. Anything else you'd like to say about the meetings last week or TC46 in general?
So TC, a lot of people think of ISO work as being somewhat of a black hole, a black box in terms of understanding the process. And believe me, there are pretty heavy duty procedures and policies and structures about how things are supposed to happen and deadlines and document numbers and all of this. And it can seem from the outside a little labyrinthine. But it is, at the end of the day, it's teams of volunteers working internationally to solve problems. And so anyone who's been is familiar with a NISO process or a NISO project or a standards effort, from a working group participation level, it won't seem that different. Maybe a little bit more bureaucratic and a little bit more challenging to find an opportune teleconference time. But the work itself is very similar. And I think it's such a great opportunity to engage with the international community in the development of these efforts and projects. So I encourage you all to, if you're in the United States, to participate through NISO and volunteer in one of these working groups. It's a great opportunity to meet international colleagues and get a different perspective about how some of these technologies work in other environments. I think it's one of the great opportunities to engage and work at an international level on some of these challenges, mm-hmm. particularly if you, you know, if you're working in your own library, you know, how do these, you know, learning from your expertise and getting your expertise and voice in this process is important, but also it's good for the people who participate to kind of open your eyes and open your mindset in terms of how others apply some of these technologies and some of these approaches to running organizations. I think there's real benefit in learning and understanding how others do things, kind of taking some of that learning back to your own organization.
Yeah. Anybody in the audience want to comment or ask a question? Just another opportunity. Not required, of course. All right, I'm going to shut off the recording, and just in case there's any